A critical procedural vote on the bipartisan two-year budget agreement is scheduled in the U.S. Senate today. And we will hear from both of Wisconsin's U.S. senators on the deal this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, December 17th. Some Democrats don't like this deal, in part because it doesn't extend unemployment benefits. Some Republicans don't like the deal because it doesn't cut spending enough. But according to media reports this morning, the Bipartisan Budget Act has enough support to pass the vote today, and then a vote for final passage would be scheduled tomorrow. What do you think of this budget deal? What questions do you have about the budget deal or related issues like the farm bill? Or maybe you want to talk about unemployment benefits. Maybe you want to talk about food stamps or the SNAP program. We welcome your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Very happy to have with us Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. Good morning.
More Joy, how you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us. Now, you say you will vote for the bill as long as the Senate doesn't make any changes to make it any worse.
Make it worse, right?
Yeah. Why do you support it?
Well, I think the number one solution to our economic problems, our deficit problem, really is economic growth. And, you know, all the dysfunction here in Washington, D.C., all the uncertainty, you know, with government shutdowns or threatened government shutdowns, really has economic consequences. And, you know, as a result, I'm not happy that we are abandoning for 2 years the only fiscal discipline that we've enacted here with the Budget Control Act, but we're doing it for the first year by about $44 billion is how much we'll exceed the old BCA caps by. But, you know, one of the things I point out is, you know, the credit markets are watching the U.S. government and the dysfunction here. All it takes is a quarter of a percent interest rate. You know, in other words, when creditors look at the U.S. and say, these guys aren't very serious about getting their act together, and they start saying, well, we're loaning you money, but at higher rates. It only takes a quarter of a percent interest rate to increase our interest expense by $44 billion. So I just think the benefit of getting government shutdowns off the table through fiscal year 2015 will have the type of economic benefits bring a little bit more certainty to our economy so that businesses can be more successful so they can actually start creating jobs, which is, you know, really what this is all about.
Is stopping or ending the government shutdowns for 2 years the only good thing in this budget deal?
Well, by also providing committees and agencies the certainty of what they're going to have to spend. You know, funding government with these continuing resolutions, the agencies do not know what they're going to be spending from year to year, particularly in defense. You know, they actually do have to have multi-year acquisition programs, and not giving them the budgeting certainty creates a high level of uncertainty as well. I don't know the exact figure. You know, it might also be close to the $44 billion per year just in terms of inefficiencies because we are so dysfunctional in terms of the way we budget and appropriate money here in the federal government. And quite honestly, I have to, you know, criticize the United States Senate, the body I serve in. We haven't passed an appropriation bill in the United States Senate in 2 years. Joy, that is the primary function of Congress, is to authorize federal government activity and then fund them, appropriate money for them. We haven't even passed one appropriation bill in the United States Senate, so it's almost impossible to convey the dysfunction here. This bill at least provides some functioning organization to our budgeting process, and I think that's a good thing, both economically and just from a standpoint of good governance.
Now, Congressman Ryan has taken some heat from conservatives who say that this deal increases spending up front and that expecting savings on the back end is a pipe dream. Do you not disagree with that?
Well, this is different than some of these, you know, spend this year and pay for it over 10 years. A lot of those are just promises of cutting discretionary spending. What this actually does is this makes structural reforms to some mandatory spending programs, and people can agree or disagree or like which ones are actually reduced in spending, But it's real mandatory reforms, and it would take another law to be passed to undo that. So this isn't about promising future cuts. This is actually making those mandatory changes that are far more certain. So I think that's not a valid criticism.
The CNN is reporting, it's been counting heads, that it now appears that the bipartisan budget compromise has enough support in the Senate to clear this this procedural vote today, but says not all the votes are locked in. What's your thought on this?
Well, one of the reasons I made my announcement on Sunday was just to encourage my colleagues to at least consider the fact that we probably ought to get this behind us, return some certainty to the economy. And Joy, you know, one thing to point out here is, for example, the House budget over the next 10 years would propose spending about $4 trillion less than the current Congressional Budget Office baseline. The Senate budget, Patty Murray's budget, proposes to spend $1 trillion more. So the sides are $5 trillion apart in terms of spending just over the next 10 years. You know, the Democrat budget here also would want to increase taxes by $1 trillion. So we are a long ways apart in terms of what we really believe the solution is to the problem here. So from my standpoint, I think any agreement providing any certainty was probably pretty good achievement. And really, I think Paul Ryan was basically charged with come up with some agreement so we can take government shutdowns off the table for, you know, certainly for the next year. And he actually accomplished through 2015. I think that's a good thing, which is why I decided to support it.
We will continue talking with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson for the next 15 minutes or so, and we'll welcome any questions you have, especially on this bipartisan budget deal, which comes up before the U.S. Senate today. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking in this half hour with Ron Johnson, a Republican U.S. Senator from Wisconsin, and we are talking about the vote that is expected today in the U.S. Senate. It's a procedural vote. A vote on final passage of the Bipartisan Budget Act could happen tomorrow night. And we're talking with Senator Johnson about why he supports this bipartisan budget deal, and we're welcoming your questions for him. President Obama, Senator Johnson, wants Congress to extend unemployment benefits, which are set to run out for 1.3 million Americans next week. This extension of unemployment benefits did not make it into this budget agreement. Should Congress take this up and pass it or not?
If the first thing you have to see before we even consider spending additional money on extending unemployment benefits is what would the pay for be? I mean, what is the lower priority spending item in the budget that we could substitute that spending for? And, you know, even President Obama's economic advisors, Larry Summer, one of them, does argue, I think, pretty convincingly in his writings that by extending unemployment benefits for too long, you actually extend unemployment. And, you know, one story I tell of a painting contractor, I won't even name the city, but this is in Wisconsin, and the gentleman came up to me, pretty frustrated and was begging me not to vote to extend unemployment benefits. And the story he told me is, you know, he finally got a couple big painting jobs, and he went back to his crew who he'd laid off to a person. They would not, you know, accept employment again. And they're very honest with him. He said, well, it doesn't make any sense for us to do this until our unemployment benefits run out. And really to add insult to injury, he lost the jobs to those same crew members who did the jobs for cash. So, I mean, that's not a universal criticism, but those are some of the real world consequences of extending unemployment benefits. It does somewhat, you know, in some instances, reduce the incentive for people to take those jobs.
Jan in Arena is concerned about the unemployment benefits. Hi, Jan.
Hello. I would just like to ask Mr. Johnson what he thinks the people who are going to be thrown off of unemployment are supposed to do after December 28th. They're not all children. I mean, they're not all young people. A lot of them are mothers with children and fathers struggling to keep their families going. What are they supposed to do when there are no jobs?
Well, again, I I have a great deal of sympathy for anybody in those situations, and there are a number of different programs to provide financial support for people, you know, once they go off of unemployment benefits. But again, you know, one of my problems, and again, if we can actually find the lower priority spending items, it's probably something I can support. But as a fiscal conservative, one of the things I'm talking about and concerned about is if we don't get our fiscal house in order, if we just return to the average interest rate that the federal government paid over the last 30 years from 1970 to 1999, when we were a far more creditworthy nation, about a 5.3% interest rate, that would add $650 billion per year to our interest expense. That's more than we spend on defense. So, you know, just you can always take a look at every one of these spending programs and have a great deal of sympathy and say, yeah, boy, let's keep spending money there. Let's continue to provide those benefits. But if we don't get our fiscal house in order, if we don't show the type of fiscal discipline, we're going to have some debt crisis, and then we won't be able to afford any of these programs. So, you know, again, I have a great deal of sympathy for people in the situation. But I think you can take a look at a number of studies that just continually, this is on a macro basis, not on a micro basis, but on a macro basis, continue to extend unemployment benefits, extends unemployment, and that's not a good thing.
Let's take another call from Randy in Madison. Hello, Randy.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I've got a problem with Washington and the state of Wisconsin as far as parties working together, especially the Republican Party, especially if you are a Tea Party. They do not want to compromise. They want nothing to do with Democrats. They dislike the President of the United States. If Washington and the states, it's for working together. It is for working together, and if you can't do that, you have no business being in politics.
Well, what about this bipartisan budget agreement, Randy? Didn't they work together here?
It's good. Yeah, they did. It's not good. It's not good. It's not perfect, but it's better than nothing. Yes, it is better than nothing. More work needs to be put on it. Needs to be put in it on both sides. Not just Ron Johnson's going to disagree with me, and that's fine. But the people in Wisconsin are progressive. They don't want to hear just his side of it. The Democrats need to give in, and so do the Republicans.
Do we need more compromise, Senator Johnson?
Well, Randy and Joy, I've always said, and this is true, I'm willing to work with anybody who's willing to acknowledge the problem and work with me in good faith to fix it. And I've already got a proven track record here in Washington, D.C. I'm one of the few Republican senators that was working, you know, pretty diligently with the White House, trying to determine where there are areas of agreement to start closing this enormous deficit and debt gap that we have here in this country. And so I've worked incredibly hard trying to define the problem, trying to get the other side to admit we have a problem. But that's really the basis of the stalemate here. The logjam is the other side doesn't admit we have a problem. You go into any the long-term driver of debt and deficit is definitely particularly Medicare, as well as Social Security. Over the next 30 years, Medicare will pay out about $36 trillion more in benefits than it takes in. There's a dollar that goes into the system, but $3 go out. Social Security will pay out about $12.7 trillion more in benefits than it takes in the payroll tax over the next 30 years. And yet, you know, our colleagues on the other side of the aisle, you sit down and try and talk to them about, you know, how do you close this long-term debt and deficit? They say, well, Social Security, Medicare is off the table. Well, it's very difficult to work with people that even refuse to acknowledge the problem. So, you know, I've demonstrated my ability to try and do that. I've worked diligently to do it. We've done the 30-year projections to show the American public, to show Wisconsinites, here's the extent of the problem. I'm just waiting for people to step up in good faith to really acknowledge the severe, incredibly difficult challenges financially that we face in this country.
What did the Tea Party compromise on in this budget deal? What's in the budget deal that conservative Republicans would rather is not there?
Well, when we're facing, according to my projections, and by the way, CBO, the range is somewhere between $56 trillion and $107 trillion worth of deficits in the next 30 years. Okay, that's enormous, okay? When you're facing those types of challenges, the only fiscal discipline we've enacted since I've been here is the Budget Control Act, which established spending limits, which are now being busted. Now, that's an act that I didn't vote for because I didn't think it went far enough. It's not solving the problem. Yet, 45 Democrat senators voted for that. President Obama signed it into law, but that's the first thing the Senate budget did is they busted those caps. And so the compromise here is we're exceeding those budget caps in the next 3 years by about $63 billion. I don't want to do that. There are plenty of areas in the federal government, including the Defense Department, that we can become far more efficient and effective without having to bust those caps yet in order to get an agreement, in order to make sure that we don't shut down the government, to provide some additional certainty to the agencies as well as to our economy. I'm willing to make that compromise so that we don't have to threaten government shutdowns, which I think harms economic growth. Let me just point out one other number in terms of why economic growth is so vitally important in terms of closing deficits. From 2009 to 2013, even with a meager economic growth that we've experienced, that most Americans really haven't even felt, it's just kind of showing up as a statistic, the federal government has increased revenue by $669 billion per year. Again, let me repeat that. $669 billion per year is additional revenue over 2009 from last year. So economic growth is the best solution to our problem. And, of course, we're doing all kinds of things in the federal government, whether it's these shutdowns, whether it's dysfunction, not appropriating funds for government, as well as just all the regulations and uncompetitive tax system, you know, that harms economic growth. So, you know, that's why I keep saying we need to limit the size of government because it does far too much harm to our economy, and that's what we really need to heal and to grow.
We have a number of callers who want to know what low-priority spending programs would you cut in order to fund the extension of unemployment benefits?
Well, first of all, let's take a look at the term cut. Over the last 10 years, the federal government spent about $31 trillion. The House budget proposes to spend about $41 trillion over the next 10 years. The White House and Senate budget's about $47 trillion. So nobody's in total talking about cutting anything. We're just trying to limit the rate of growth. But here's an example. There are, I just heard Senator Colvin say, 47 different jobs training programs in the federal government, in different agencies. It spends about $31 billion per year. Now, are some of those effective? It's pretty hard to tell at all whether any of those are effective. But if you start consolidating some of those duplicated programs and you know, the Government Accountability Office, because of some excellent amendments that Tom Corbin has enacted into law previous, they've done studies showing, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars that is being spent on programs that are duplicated throughout the federal government. But we have such an inefficient method of appropriating, and people just aren't willing to take a look at that, you know, with a really fine, a sharpened pencil and say, let's get rid of some of these job training programs. We could probably save tens of billions of dollars by doing that.
Now, I wanted to talk before we let you go about the dairy cliff. The House passed a short-term extension to the current farm law. But Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says he's not going to take that up, saying a short-term fix takes the pressure off achieving a long-term deal. Is Harry Reid making a mistake by not taking up the short-term fix?
Well, you know, I think we need to proceed with some farm bill policy in place. If everything expires December 31st, that's not a good thing, so you might have to do a short-term deal. You know, the debate really in terms of the farm bill has to do with the fact that it's really not a farm bill, it's a food stamp bill. 80% of the spending there is in food stamps, and here's some facts. In the year 2000, there were 17 million Americans that were, you know, taking advantage of food stamps. Today, there's about 47 million Americans. You know, over the last decade, in general, the percentage of the population on food stamps varied somewhere between 6 and 10%. Now there's 15% of the American population on food stamps, and this is 3 or 4 years into recovery. So there's a problem in terms of eligibility. There's a problem from a standpoint that the food stamp program is out of control. And again, it all sounds great. It all sounds wonderful until you start realizing that we can't pay for all of the government that we've promised to people, and we are literally mortgaging our children's future. This cannot go on. We have $17 trillion worth of debt. We're going to add, you know, probably another $7 to $10 trillion to that debt over the next 10 years. At some point in time, you know, world creditors are going to look at the U.S. and say, we're just not going to loan you any more money, certainly not at those rates. That's that debt crisis that we're actually trying to avoid.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Have a great day.
Ron Johnson, a Republican U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. We will welcome in after we check news. Oh, I guess I guess I ended a little bit too early just looking at the clock. So I will remind listeners that you can call in at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Tammy Baldwin, a Democratic U.S. Senator from Wisconsin, will be joining us after the news. After 8 o'clock, we will be talking with Kevin McKinley, and we will be taking your questions and comments about your personal finances. That's coming up after 8 o'clock. Tomorrow at this time, by the way, we will be releasing a new Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert College survey that shows how Wisconsinites feel about Governor Walker for president and the Affordable Care Act, as well as President Obama's job performance. So we will be talking with political scientist Wendy Scattergood about a special Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert College survey between 7 and 8 tomorrow. We'll check news and then we'll welcome in Tammy Baldwin and continue to take your questions on the bipartisan budget deal. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:36 on this Tuesday, December 17th. We just heard from U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, who says he plans to support the bipartisan budget deal that comes before the Senate today for a procedural vote. He says the certainty in spending levels and the removal of the threat of a government shutdown will be good for the economy. Now we will hear from U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin and continue to take your questions and views for her on the budget deal or related issues at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Tammy Baldwin is a Democratic U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning.
And you, too, will support this budget deal?
Yes, I will. The bipartisan budget agreement certainly is not perfect, but it is progress. And I hope that it will help break the destructive pattern of drifting from one manufactured crisis to the next, as we've seen over the past several years. And like Senator Johnson, I expect that this will help us avoid the threat of a shutdown, and also will begin the process of rolling back sequestration, a policy that has resulted in arbitrary across-the-board cuts and has really prevented the type of robust economic growth that we really need at this point.
Yeah, no, Your colleague in the House, the Democratic Congressman Mark Pocan, voted against this deal in the House last week for a couple of reasons. But one was he thought it went too far in continuing partial sequestration cuts without, for example, any tax increases to deal with the deficit. Your response to that?
Well, as I said, the agreement isn't perfect by any means. And the House passed budget resolution, it was a far cry from what the Senate passed back in the spring of this year. But we, I think, agree that sequestration is an unwise and very arbitrary policy of trying to achieve certain deficit reduction goals with just across-the-board cuts. And we've seen how they've devastated programs that serve those in the greatest need, like Meals on Wheels, programs for elderly and those with disabilities
who need nutrition delivered to their door. And children who participate in the Head Start program, for example, we've just seen available spaces in Head Start classrooms disappear. And, you know, we certainly need to tackle our deficit, but we need to do so in a thoughtful, smart, and balanced way. I agree with Mark Pocan that there ought to have been revenues of, closing wasteful tax loopholes so that everybody shoulders their fair share of the burden of deficit reduction. But that said, in order to move forward and stop this drifting from one crisis to the next and fiscal cliff or shutdown or default on debt, we needed to compromise, and this is the result of that process.
Mm-hmm. President Obama is calling on Congress to extend unemployment benefits, and I know you agree wholeheartedly with him. But this deal does not extend unemployment benefits, and they run out for 1.3 Americans next week. What's going to happen to them?
Well, it's a very serious situation, and especially when our recovery from the deep recession our nation faced starting in 2007-2008. Since our recovery has been sluggish at best, and in Wisconsin not even as fast as they've seen in other parts of our country, we know that there's lots of people who have been unemployed for extended periods of time. And this is the part of the unemployment insurance program that we're talking about, the long-term benefits. The estimate of Wisconsin impact is that nearly 24,000 jobless workers in Wisconsin will lose their unemployment on January 1st. And if we don't act quickly in 2014, over the course of the year 2014, we're expecting just shy of 100,000 Wisconsinites would be affected. I am very hopeful, nonetheless, that we're going to be able to take prompt action on this early next year. It's certainly on the agenda. While it didn't make it into the bipartisan budget agreement that we're working on this week, and the House unfortunately has adjourned and gone home for the balance of the year, which is part of the reason why we can't fix this before the end of December. I know that we intend to work on this immediately when we resume session in January. In addition to the very personal and individual impact this has on people who will lose benefits, unemployment income at the end of December, you know, there's a real ripple effect that this has throughout our economy, because this is the type of unemployment income that is used for basic expenses, you know, groceries, electric bill, that sort of thing. And so the local communities will see an impact if we don't get the job done.
If Senator Johnson was indicating that in some cases, and he gave a Wisconsin example, some people are on extended unemployment benefits and will stay on those benefits until they run out before they will look for a job. In essence, saying it's discouraging some who are on these extended unemployment benefits from getting a job, and that they'll just have to get a job if the benefits run out.
Yeah, you know, if we had have seen a more robust economic recovery in Wisconsin, that argument might hold more weight. But frankly, the people that I encounter who share their stories about seeking work, who were displaced during our recession, that began in 2007, 2008, the jobs that they had, many of them aren't coming back. And you see people holding down maybe two or sometimes even three if you add in part-time work. It takes a while to recover, and it's been unfortunate in Wisconsin that we've lagged behind the rest of the country. So I think this is a very important policy to continue. And, if you look at even regional unemployment rates in Wisconsin. The northern part of the state has been really hit hard, as well as some parts in our southern and southeast region. We need to be focused on this.
And he said that he and other Republicans wouldn't necessarily object to extending unemployment benefits, but that other lower priority programs would have to be have their spending cut, so we're not spending more. What's your response to that?
Well, you know, I don't have a crystal ball that tells me how we're going to finance the unemployment insurance extension when we start to tackle this in January, but I do have a hunch about it, because it looks like we'll be debating unemployment or extended unemployment compensation at the same time that they're putting the final details on the farm bill. And we know that the farm bill at this point looks like it will produce tens of billions of dollars of savings over the life of that bill. And so that's certainly one of the sources of potential funding that people are looking at to be able to help us provide relief to people who have been seeking work but unable to find work that helps them support their families.
Yeah, speaking of which, Senator Reid says he is not going to hold a vote on the House's short-term extension of the current farm bill. Do you agree with that decision?
I do. I've been in conversation frequently with the Senate chairwoman of the Senate Agriculture Committee. And again, you know, the House chose to wrap up its business last week, leaving several things undone, including addressing unemployment insurance and the farm bill. We think had they stuck around, we could have gotten both of these done before the end of the calendar year. That said, they've gone and we are where we are, but we need to keep the pressure on to pass this immediately when we return without any delay. And I think that, as I understand the negotiations, that they've reached agreement on almost all of the outstanding issues, that it's being drafted so it will be prepared for us when we return, and we should be able to deal with it very quickly. Now, of course, a lot of us who have been worried about the expiration of many policies at the end of this calendar year have noted over time that this means that we will revert to actually 1940s era agriculture policies in this country. But the U.S. Department of Agriculture has said that they will not begin to implement those decades-old policies if they are assured that we are on the verge of acting, and I think that is where we are right now.
So we're not going to pay $7 a gallon for milk.
Oh, we all hope not. My goodness. And you named the importance of this in a state like Wisconsin, where agriculture, to begin with, is a pillar of our state's economy, but dairy is a full, almost half of that agriculture economy. And there's some very promising new policies in this farm bill that really, I think, gets us squarely in the 21st century and helps dairy farmers manage the very real risks they take every day in much more effective ways. So I am hopeful to see that that measure passed in very short order, and to see these new policies come into play.
We have to take a break, but Senator Johnson also referred to the current farm bill. He said the problem is that the farm bill isn't so much a farm bill as it is a food stamp bill. That's going to be a big hurdle, isn't it? Don't Republicans want to cut the food stamp program substantially?
Yes, that has been a really significant issue. But let me just say that the Senate passed its farm bill in the late spring, summer of this year, and had a very strong commitment to, first of all, keeping agriculture and nutrition policies linked in one measure, the farm bill, and secondly, to assuring that in a nation with the abundance that we have in terms of agriculture, that children don't go hungry, that seniors don't go hungry. And so there was a very strong commitment in the Senate bill, which I will remind folks passed on a very strong bipartisan margin. In the House, the politics were a little bit different. And at first, they severed the two issues. They passed a farm policy bill and a nutrition bill separately, and they just gutted the food stamp program within that nutrition bill. There was an insistence on the Senate side that those two measures be combined once again. And the Farm Bill Conference Committee has dealt with it as one and did, you know, worked as hard as they could to restore the cuts that were made in the House side. So I think it will end up being a compromise, but frankly, these two policy issues belong together. You know, it is our farmers who provide the food for our nutrition programs, and it's also a very good way to make sure that urban legislators in the House work closely with rural legislators. It's not such a big issue in the Senate where we represent entire states, but in the House it is.
We are talking with U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, and we'll get to your calls in just a moment. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What do you make of the bipartisan budget deal that goes before the Senate for a procedural vote today? If it gets the 60 votes needed today, and looks like more and more like it'll get those 60 votes, final passage in the Senate could happen by tomorrow night. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking about the Bipartisan Budget Act that goes before the U.S. Senate today and related issues with U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. If you have any questions or views for her, we welcome them at 1-800-642-1234. John in Rhinelander is with us. Hello, John. John, are you there? Well, John, I can't hear you, sorry. So we'll go to Jill in Rhinelander. Hi, Jill.
Hi. I have a question. What kind of pork has been inserted into this legislation? And if this is supposed to be cutting money and kind of watching out for the taxpayers' dollars, I don't think there should be any pork in it. Thank you.
Well, I guess it depends on your definition of pork. Senator Baldwin, what can you tell Jill?
Well, first of all, just a little bit more about the budgeting process at the federal level, which is a sort of two-step process. First, you have a budget resolution that is really just the bare bones, the skeleton of how we spend, and it gives overall spending levels in discretionary spending, military, and discretionary non-military. And then there's what's called mandatory spending, which are the programs for which there's a linked revenue stream like Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid. So the budget resolution is not something where you have individual projects, even any sort of spending detail. That's what's done by the House and Senate Appropriations Committee. So we're really starting a process, believe it or not, even though we're so late in the year, of finishing up the 2014 budgeting process. And this budget agreement also contains the spending direction for 2015. But as far as specific projects, that's not what the budget resolution is all about. It is what the appropriation process is all about. And you may remember that after the last fiscal crisis, the resolution demanded that the budget committees come up with a budget compromise by mid-December, and that the Appropriations Committee come up with their spending plans by January 15th. We're counting on them to do that as soon as we pass this, and that's the next time where there really ought to be scrutiny on what programs are getting funding, what programs are being cut, that's when the more the details of the budget process begin to take shape.
Now, a lot of the wrangling that we've heard in Washington had to do with the Affordable Care Act and the funding of the Affordable Care Act and attempts to repeal it, and we had the government shutdown over this.
Yeah.
What this budget deal funds the Affordable Care Act?
It does,
mm-hmm.
And if you think about the Affordable Care Act legislation that passed in 2010, much of the funding, so that it was not something that was going to increase our deficit, come from new streams of revenue associated with that measure. Some of them have been talked a lot about, for example, the medical device tax, but there are different funding streams, including the premiums that people will start to pay on January 1st for their new insurance if they're getting it through the healthcare marketplace. So there's a variety of things that will come into effect. Some of them are not at all affected by this budget resolution that perhaps arguably focuses more on discretionary spending than the mandatory spending.
We have a caller on the Affordable Care Act, Charlie in Milwaukee. Hi, Charlie. We're short on time, but what's your question?
Well, my question for Senator Baldwin is that as political factors show that Obama has lied to pass the Affordable Care Act, is the only way to fund the Affordable Care Act budget measures, or are people going to look at other ways of dealing with it since they've been lied to?
Yeah, I think perhaps what I said in response to the last question may also answer this, that when the Affordable Care Act was put together, they didn't. The intent was not to add any deficit or add to the deficit. And so there's a number of different funding streams associated to make sure that that is the case. A number of them go into effect on January 1st as the marketplace opens and people subscribe. We're going to be watching it closely, though, because as everybody knows, there was a lot of flaws and problems related to the rollout of the program. In particular, the biggest doorway to the marketplace was the online access through healthcare.gov, and that website was pretty much non-functional for the first several weeks. Now that it's up and running, we're trying to make up for lost time, but we're going to have to monitor very closely because some of the assumptions made were based on enrollment figures that may not be achieved.
Yeah, we just have a minute to go. Do you have what's your prediction for the Affordable Care Act for 2014?
Well, we're making up for lost time as a country on this. Those states that opted to have their own state-based marketplace are in a bit better shape, but our governor decided not to. And therefore, we had to suffer through the same problems as everyone else did with healthcare.gov. But the enrollment figures are increasing. I saw both national and state level estimates of the numbers of enrollees through the marketplace in Wisconsin, and it looks like people are now successfully enrolling. We just need to push that number up to the degree that we can to make a success of it in 2014. But we're going to have to study it very closely because of the problems we've had with the rollout.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
Tammy Baldwin, Democratic U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Christy Taylor for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.